It sounds cool. Like fun. Get out your sugar.
Let's yes, it glide. Really does. Sugar gliders and Clue. That just sounds like a marvelous party.
Sounds like somebody Trent Lott runs around with, as far as I'm concerned.
Ooh, we'll have to save that for another day, Bob.
Ba-dum-bum. All right. Hey, boy, this is getting more fun by the minute. No, I mean, with things that...
We only got 10 seconds left, so, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But thank you, Mark. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, John, as ever. Upcoming, All Foxed Up with John Fox. And, hey, look, it's another edition of the Horn Section in the can. Thanks, everybody.
Good night.
This is the Quality News Network. There's been an historic breakthrough in diplomatic efforts between Israeli and Palestinian leaders with the help of the White House. Israeli and Palestinian leaders agreeing to revive long-stalled peace talks starting early next month, making an independent Palestinian state a possibility. Speaking from today's Middle Eastern Peace Conference at Annapolis, Maryland, President Bush read a joint statement drafted by Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, who say discussions could begin next month with full agreement reached by late next year. In Hebron, West Bank, a protest against the peace talks brought clashes between those loyal to Palestinian leader Abbas and Islamists who called him a traitor. Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf said goodbye to his troops today. He's expected to officially resign tomorrow as head of the country's army. He'll be sworn in as civilian president then on Thursday. Six unarmed Iraqi civilians were killed by U.S. forces north of Baghdad in the past 48 hours. A suicide bomber disguised as a shepherd blew himself up near a Baghdad checkpoint, killing 9 Iraqi policemen. The defense ministers of South and North Korea held a landmark meeting today to discuss resolution of a long-standing border dispute in the West Sea. NFL star safety Sean Taylor died of a gunshot wound today after being shot by an intruder at his home near Miami, Florida. The 24-year-old played for the Washington Redskins. He was their first pick in the 2004 NFL Draft. Texas oil man Oscar Wyatt was sentenced to 1 year and 1 day in prison for conspiracy in the United Nations oil for food scandal. The 83-year-old self-made oil tycoon is one of 7 individuals convicted in the matter, along with Chevron Corporation, which paid $30 million in civil and criminal liability in that case. Unless carbon emissions are cut in half over the next generation, climate change is likely to cause large-scale human and economic setbacks, plus irreversible ecological catastrophe. It's one of the strongest warnings yet given by the UN on the lasting impact of climate change on our future standard of living. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll be right back.
PM Forney is on a mission to make life better. His pathway is civility. A professor at Johns Hopkins University, his pioneering study in civility produced a book called Choosing Civility, The 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct. In his book, Forney explains what is civility and what it means to be civil in today's world. He explores the recent decline of civility and offers ways that the direction might be reversed. His brilliant and engaging discourse outlines civility's basic rules, underscoring the values that practicing civility brings to our own lives, as well as to the lives of others. Forney's book is sprinkled with stimulating quotes, such as this by Dwight Curry, who said, "We have a choice about how we behave, and that means we have the choice to opt for civility and grace." For more information, click the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Freddie Mac will sell $6 billion worth of company shares to cover more bad debt losses. Last week, company officials set aside $2.5 billion for the 3 months from July to September. Exposure to bad mortgage debt centered on the subprime factor, which is producing record loan defaults. Five countries that make up the East African community have agreed to a plan that would open their markets to the European Union. Controversial trade obligations are due to expire next month, ruled illegal by the World Trade Organization. Financial aid to help third world nations adapt to more floods, droughts, and other changes due to global warming will cost the richest nations an estimated $86 billion a year by 2015. According to a panel of experts commissioned by the United Nations, half the cost, or around $44 billion, will go to improvements on infrastructure. Financial management software maker Intuit will acquire Homestead Technologies for $170 million. And stocks bounced back today on news that Citigroup got a cash infusion of $7 billion from the Abu Dhabi Investment Authority. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 215 points to close at 12,958. NASDAQ up 40 points. The S&P 500 up 21. And there's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
This is a top to what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look. Right across the board.
Oh.
11,
oh,
11,
and most of
11,
the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey, hey, everybody. How are you? Welcome aboard Foxed Up here for Thursday morning for most of you? It's Thursday afternoon here, Wednesday night, whatever. It's the witching hour here on the Head On Radio Network. And I have, for Peter Godbold, a bit of information. going back to, you asked me a question at the end of the horn section just previous to this program, and asked me if I knew what a sugar glider was. Well, I didn't. And now I do. You ready? And I guess this refers to, Peter was referring to, it's Tuesday, it's Wednesday, whatever. I get so confused. I'm always ahead of you guys anyway. Some outfit that wouldn't cover the same-sex partners but would cover health insurance for pets, and one of the pets that they would cover would be the sugar glider. And so here you go, Peter. The sugar glider is around 16 to 21 centimeters. That's 6.3 to 7.5 inches in length. With a tail almost as long as the body and almost as thick as the human thumb. It weighs between 90 and 150 grams. That's 3 to 5.3 ounces. The fur is generally pearly gray and black with cream patches on the underbelly and black or green ears. The color variations include leucistic and albino recessive traits. Distinctive features of the enemy, however, are the twin skin membranes called patagia, which extend from the fifth finger in the forelimb back to the first toe and the hind foot. Aren't you glad that this is covered by a company health insurance company or outfit? But anyway, it's a small rodent. That's what it is. It's a small rodent. Speaking of rodents, I'm actually not talking about Johnny Howard. And as time goes by, I'll be speaking a whole lot less about Johnny Howard. you should have known when to retire. You know, there are certain decisions that you make in life that you can't unmake. Well, New South Wales and Victoria, the state that I live in and the one just to the south of us, have made a decision that they won't be able to change. And I think it's a very dumb decision. The Victorian and New South Wales governments say farmers will enjoy higher profits after the two states become the first to lift its bans on genetically modified crops. That's right. Australia's perfect, unblemished. There's no chance of GM anything anywhere has just been flushed down the gurgler. Because once you open it up and allow the stuff to be planted, the genie is out of the bottle. There ain't no getting it back. Now, from what I understand, the process that this decision went through, the board that oversaw the reports and such, we're all pro-GM people. Funny they came to this decision. And they say that people's concerns about GM crops getting into the natural supply are unfounded. Unfounded. You can control the wind? Wow, you're mighty. But no. Because of profit factors, we're not going to open up the door on the GM routine here in Australia, which is just really insane. And the premiers of South Australia and Western Australia are not happy at all because they enjoy quite a bit of economy out of the simple fact that it's very easy to advertise and verify when an island nation has not planted any GM crops. You know, once you introduce those crops, you've rewritten the history books, and now farmers in other states may not be able to prove that their crops are GM-free. Now, this is gonna be with canola only at the moment, but you know that that's just the beginning. Short-sighted. Geez, I hate the New South Wales government. I really do. They're Labor, too, and I think they're worthless. There's a good example of a government that's been in far too long. Unfortunately, the opposition, in some ways, worries me more. So what do you do then? I guess we'll see in the next couple of years. But, you know, it's interesting that, you know, I do not believe, I can't verify this, but I do not believe that there was really any public input in these decisions. It was made at a corporate and government level. So, of course, these things are going to go through. And, You know, we've got a federal government that hasn't even been sworn in yet. Would they have any ability to interfere with this? I would hope that they would, but I mean, geez, you know, you got enough on your plate at the moment. You've just taken government. You're working on making good on your industrial relations promises that you made, which were a good chunk of the reason that you got in. There's only so much that you can pay attention to, and so was this announcement saved till just a couple of days after the election? You can't tell me they didn't know anything about this last week. But it's too bad. I feel really bad for, you know, Australian farmers have had a unique situation. The entire place hadn't been contaminated yet. So, you know, what's this going to mean for the companies that I buy organic goods from? Are they going to be able to prove that there's no GM content in their foods if they're, you know, within wind's distance of a farmer who's planting Frankenfood? You know, it's canola oil. What do you see canola in aside from margarine and processed food? I've never seen any chef going, and my oil of choice is the canola. Right. And I don't know if Monsanto has a big lobby here in Australia. It wouldn't surprise me. You know, the Australian government, up until now, we'll see what happens now, has been very, you know, oh, we'll just, the GM stuff just needs to happen. We can't argue with that because that's just progress now, don't you know? And No, we can't be, you know, labeling the GM foods as GM because that would be unfair to business. They might lose sales if people knew that they were buying Frankenfood. Ah, drives you bloody nuts. And can I just tell you, summer's kicking in here in Australia. It's getting bloody hot in the studio. John, you want to do your show from 4 to 5 in the afternoon in the summer in one of the hottest places on Earth? Yeah, sure. Anyway, while I wipe the sweat out of my eyes, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, and we'll be right back after this.
You want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Two Tune in to Foxed Up with John Fox this Thursday night at his new time, midnight Eastern. We'll take a look at England's bad girl, Amy Winehouse.
I'm someone who can't keep my mouth shut. I will just say what's on my mind, and they will put me in the paper for that. They will say, oh, and she's bitter and twisted about stuff.
So be there, Thursday night, midnight Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said, no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Gay and transgender people are part of every community.
We are your neighbors, your coworkers, your family.
If someone you know comes out, be willing to listen.
You have the power to make a difference by treating others with dignity and respect.
Choose to be an ally and a friend.
Find out how. Go to glad.org. That's GLAAD.org.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. And Gene sent this to me, and this is the kind of stuff I really do like to see. Got to start getting focused back on what we're supposed to be doing here, which is stuff on trying to save this planet. And I'm happy to be able to say that I'm a member nation in those that are signing on to Kyoto. Yay! But anyway, Google is really throwing down some money when it comes to green power and alternatives. From MarketWatch.com, Google Incorporated said Tuesday it's earmarking hundreds of millions for renewable energy products as the electricity-hungry search giant moves to embrace solar, wind, and geothermal energy. Google also said it expects to spend tens of millions during 2008 on research and development as well on related investments in renewable energy, becoming the latest Fortune 500 company to take to the green movement this year. Google announced that it had set a goal to produce 1 gigawatt, enough to power the city of San Francisco, out of renewable energy cheaper than coal. It said that it's optimistic this can be achieved in years, not decades. Google's renewable energy cheaper than coal initiative would be part of a new research and development program on alternative power, according to the company. In a conference call with journalists, executives declined to comment on how much electricity it uses. They also were vague about how Google would spend the hundreds of millions, but said that they're sifting through possible companies to invest in and moving ahead with plans to boost efficiency. Google said that it's developing cutting-edge energy efficiencies to power and cool its data centers in the United States and around the world. It's also generating electricity to its Mountain View, California campus from a 1.6 megawatt corporate solar panel installation, one of the largest in the United States. What's more, Google is reporting the development and adoption of plug-in vehicles through the Recharge It initiative, including a $10 million request for investment proposals. And I think I remember covering some of Google's efforts previously, and I think that they were working with one of the electric bike companies, or maybe a couple of them, to actually have, you know, charging, docking, parking stations in their parking garages for people that had, you know, electric plug-in scooters and motorcycles and things, and these things would be charged from the sun. I think this is great stuff. You know, if the government's not going to get on the bandwagon, business knows that they have to do this, and an industry as based on the electron as somebody like Google would have to be thinking seriously about where they're going to be getting all this power that they require now and the additional power that they're going to need in the future. I say also here, Google co-founder Sergey Brin, who said he's a longtime Prius owner and a fan of electric cars, said that the effort could help it grow its business by licensing power technology it develops through equity stakes in invested companies. He called on a concentrated, thorough effort over time to improve energy efficiency and cut carbon emissions. Britton said, it's not enough that Google has purchased carbon offsets to reduce its footprint by flying in jets, but he added that it's unrealistic for people to stop flying and quit using electricity altogether. Larry Page, Google co-founder and president of products, said in a statement that the company wants to apply the same creativity and innovation to the challenge of generating renewable electricity at a global significant scale and produce it cheaper than from coal. Maybe we can, you know, with moves like this, we can put the furfies of, you know, clean coal to bed for good. Google's nonprofit arm, Google.org, is working with two companies that have promising scalable energy technologies. Executives would not comment on the financial terms of the relationships, but acknowledge that the organization holds about $2 billion in Google stock to further its goals. The company said it has inked an alliance with eSolar Incorporated, a Pasadena, California-based specialist in solar thermal power, which replaces the fuel in a traditional power plant with heat produced from solar energy. The other is McKinney Power Incorporated, an Alameda, California-based company developing wind energy technologies. Also on Tuesday, Hewlett-Packard said that it will pay an undisclosed sum of 80 gigawatt hours of renewable energy from Airtricity, a company developed and operating wind farms in Europe and North America. The agreement will save the tech bellwether approximately $40,000 and cut 40,000 tons of carbon dioxide that otherwise would be emitted over the year-long contract. HP is moving to make 90% of its energy consumption in Ireland renewable. Hewlett-Packard also will install a 1-megawatt solar electric power system and purchase 15-year maintenance deal from SunPower Corp. These are some long-term plans. Now, if they're willing to take these kind of long-term plans, and notice that they're taking them in Europe and in places probably where the national governments have taken on much more concrete long-term strategies, like Germany has, you know, guaranteeing loans so that people building solar and wind farms can guarantee that their electricity will cost below a certain amount to keep it competitive with currently subsidized coal generated power. I think this is just fantastic stuff. This is the kind of motion that we need. You know, it's not going to be one government. It's not going to be one person. It's going to be everybody getting in on this. And, you know, in Sir Nicholas Stern's report last year, he talked about that, you know, international gross domestic product. If we spent 1% of that a year, I believe between now and 2020, we would more than pay for the changes that need to be made in the way we generate power and be able to maintain. But if we don't spend that money, it's going to cost us 100, 200 times that in losses in the future. And, you know, this is why it's so crucially important that Australia gets signed on to the Kyoto Agreement, because it sets up the stage for the second stage of this whole concept, which is a globally coordinated effort to reduce carbon emissions and other greenhouse gases worldwide. And it's only going to happen with everyone involved, and it's only going to happen in the time frame that we need rich countries bite the bullet, take the first steps, and then they can export those technologies to the developing world to then implement so that they can meet their targets. This idea that we're going to go and drag other countries kicking and screaming into an agreement that we ourselves haven't signed on to is just ludicrous. It's crazy. So, you know, like I said, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, the Gene probably sent this to me from fizz.org. There's an article saying, then there was one. U.S. now alone in Kyoto holdout. And, you know, I think this change here in Australia is going to end up being a little thorny for little Georgie. His last buddy is gone when it comes to the Iraq War. I mean, John Howard was the last guy on the planet that still would talk about WMD when talking about Iraq in this country. And, you know, Gail and I would just sit there like banging our head into the wall, sitting there going, "You're still talking about that?" And it's hearing things like that that made me, you know, nervous about this weekend. You just never know what the Australian people might do. But they did not allow themselves to be swayed this time, which just, it's a beautiful thing. But, you know, this all can't be left up to individual corporations, because not all of them are going to do the right thing. And, you know, it's only, I would say, a huge impact for Google is the fact that they're a technology company, ha ha ha. They know that aside from people, their biggest resource or their biggest expense is power. And, you know, looking at things like Nicholas Stern said, those that invest in the new economy first are going to be the big winners. So, you know, Google's just doing the smart thing. We're going to need this. So we might as well, since no one else is investing in it, we might as well. And then not to mention the advertising arm that they have. They get commercially viable systems out of this. They'll all know about it immediately. Won't take long. I'm going to be very interested also to see what it's going to be like over the next year here, where we have now a prime minister that, you know, knows and understands that global warming is a serious deal. And we need to have targets. We need to be a world leader instead of, you know, the grumpy rat bag rich kid in the back saying, you know, "Don't tell me what I can't do. It's all mine, mine, mine." And as policy gets laid out, you know, we're going to end up seeing things about global warming actually in policy. It's going to be a completely new and unique thing for me. You know, I've never lived in a place where there actually was a government that cared about this issue. Now they don't care about it quite as much as the Greens, but I think the Greens have enough preference vote collateral that they should be able to drive the debate when it comes to these issues. And I can only pray that you folks in the States end up getting something similar this year, because if we don't turn this thing around damn soon, we're going to be in trouble that we're not going to be able to get out of. It's that tight now. So anyway, we're going to take our bottom of the hour break. I'm going to go and gather a few more thoughts. So stick around. You're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, America's Liberal Voice. And we'll be right back.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude Wally and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Bush just pulled the knee strings on his puppet in Iraq, and Nouri al-Maliki did the jig. The prime minister signed on to a deal laying the groundwork for the long-term presence of U.S. troops there. Permanent military bases, anyone? To inaugurate the pact, U.S. troops in Baghdad killed three women on a bus that was approaching a U.S. roadblock. Part of the enduring relationship that Bush and Maliki laid out in this pact has nothing to do with the presence of U.S. troops, but with the profits of U.S. corporations. The deal would give preferential treatment for American investments, AP reports, adding nonchalantly that this could provide a huge windfall if Iraq can achieve enough stability to exploit its vast oil resources. There's that dirty three-letter word again, oil, which this war was never supposed to be about, but always, in part, was. Oil and profits are two big reasons why Bush will keep probably more than 100,000 U.S. troops in Iraq for the foreseeable future. Those are not legitimate reasons, however, to ask our soldiers to die for, and almost 4,000 of them have done so already. But at least it's out in the open now. The crassness, that is. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey. Thanks for lending an ear.
Mobile Station, where I stay. Now, before I was talking about Google putting, you know, mad amounts of money into renewable energy. And another post from Gene, I think that he sent this to me about a week ago or something. Oh, it's not even a week ago. It's only a few days ago. But from the Washington Post, they got a piece here. As the price of oil soars, many turn to renewables. So, you know, there's this certain part of where as climate change starts to take noticeable and tangible effect in our everyday lives, reality ends up burning through the denial of those who want to just keep their head in the ground. And business is catching on, and they've been catching on faster than governments, which is an amazing thing for me to say, but it's the truth. Not all. Still only a small amount, but they're doing some big things. Here in the Washington Post, I say Thomas M. Rainwater spent 25 years in what people today call the traditional old-fashioned energy business. An engineer by training, he worked at nuclear-powered and coal-fired stations, was a marketing executive of a national gas producer and pipeline, and worked for the Canadian Power Generation Company, blah-de-blah-de-blah-de-blah. Well, he's now involved in an outfit called Sun Edison. Says here, more and more people like Rainwater are joining the emerging green economy, and many of them are doing it in the Washington area. While many companies in this region are doing small things to burnish their environmental credentials, a few companies like Sun Edison are investing new business models because I think the competitive is by just removing the subsidies that go to the dirty guys. I mean, here in Australia, coal produced electricity is subsidized so that it's 13 cents a kilowatt or something. It's insane. It's insanely cheap. It's stupid. And while it's still that cheap, do you sincerely expect anyone to start turning their lights off in any, you know, great en masse? No.
the price on how we're doing it now has to go up so that the price that we're going to have to do it in the future will seem fair. Because at the moment, the way it's calculated isn't fair. Some of these new technologies, and solar geothermal being my personal favorite, I'm not, you know, one of these people that says invest in just one technology. I just happen to think this one shows so much merit and scalability, and it's flexible to different parts of the planet. It just kind of it shows great potential to create baseload power. And, you know, if just a fraction of the daily subsidy that went into coal actually went into these new technologies to get them off the ground, we could be making great roads in a very short period of time. But I think one of the hard arguments that we're going to have trouble winning, which I know you deal with this in West Virginia and we'll deal with it here, is as we really begin to discuss seriously the ideas of cap and trade systems and whatnot, that in the conversation at some point the subject's going to have to come up that countries like Australia can no longer continue to export dirty coal the way that it does now and expect to be doing its part. And so then that's where, you know, a political party like Labor can get into trouble with the unions, because there's a lot of union jobs in the coal mining industry. And it ends up being a jobs over economy thing, and I'm tired of that argument. I want to train these guys to go and do the new thing. I don't want to take their jobs away. I want to make their job nicer. I want to make their job cleaner. I want to make their job safer. Now, how we get these arguments across is going to be interesting, because there's the same financial force that helped get Labor into power will be the same financial force that will probably bark up against the reduction in coal mining. But the case has to be made for the fact that it's the new economy that we're getting into. And aside from the profits that one can gain by getting involved in these new economies early, will be the general savings to society, health costs, as the air gets cleaned up and the water gets cleaned up. I'll put money on it right now. You clean up the environment in Sydney, and I'll almost guarantee you that asthma rates for children will just drop right off within a generation, because they sure have increased within a generation. You know, and I keep coming back to this election that we've had here, and I don't want to harp on about it. You know, y'all are going to be like, all right, you won, damn it, you won. But I've been saying it as a joke for the past couple of nights, but I don't think folks have really gotten exactly the joke has been got. I keep making the joke that I've watched a democracy actually function down here. And I really want that to be seen in the United States, because I don't think much has changed since 2000. The people have gotten more active and all that. But when the next election day comes up and you go to those same crooked machines, is all this work and all this education of the masses going to be worth anything? So I don't know what we need to do to get back to having a system of elections that is trustworthy and actually hand-counted by human beings, where the only errors that you have to worry about are the human ones and not the preconceived ones. I mean, it's really amazing to watch 20 million people, whatever the voting population of that 20 million is, to all move out on a day and just serve the most unbelievable knockout punch I've ever seen in politics. And I started getting nervous the night before. We had a late poll saying that Howard was pulling back, but even though I didn't believe that poll, there was still that part of me going, oh, please, Australia, don't disappoint me again. Don't disappoint me again. And they didn't. And on Saturday morning, I can't believe I haven't told this story yet. On Saturday morning, Gail and I go out to, I go to escort her to go and vote. And from there, I was going to head off and go and, you know, do some kind of like errandy stuff. So I had the MP3 player loaded with music and ready to go off. And as soon as we kind of pop up to the school where this is, where the polling station was, I suddenly have a Labor How to Vote card being shoved in my face by our sitting member, no less. Was I awake enough to grab him for an interview? No. I had the MP3 player to do a mobile interview with. Did I think about that? No. Was I even cordial to the guy? No. You just never know when the opportunity is going to come, and I ended up standing there face to face with the with the member of this seat here early in the morning on the day where his party was going to be handed one of the most significant wins in Australian political history. And I just kind of like watched the guy go by and mumbled something at him, and 10 minutes later I was kicking myself. Because the last thing I expected to see at the polling station was the actual candidate. Just happened to be that we had the timing unbelievably spot on. Just my brain wasn't together. So that goes for all the rest of you horn hosts. You just never know. You never know when that interview is going to pop up. And always be on your guard and always be ready to record. But I wasn't on the day, but it was all right, you know. And it was, you could feel that there was a change in the air on the day. And on Sunday, I really think this entire country was in like a punch drunk daze. This was the longest campaign in Australian electoral history. It went on for a year. These guys are going at each other's throats. And then all of a sudden it was over, and everything had changed. Everything. And I want to see that kind of change in the United States. And can someone tell me who put the funny powder in Kucinich's green tea, please? Did I read this right? That his first consideration for a running mate is Ron Paul? Did I hear this right? If this is true, Kucinich has just made the first bad move of his entire run. I mean, I know the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of thing, but I don't think, and I have a strange feeling that that single move, more than anything, has just absolutely put the dagger in the back of the Kucinich campaign. I had one of those moments where I'm like, oh, Dennis, I see where you're coming from, but Jesus, man, that was not what you needed to say. And, I mean, I know because Ron Paul is coming from a similar, you know, real guy, but from the other side perspective. I'm sorry, I think Ron Paul is a bit of a nutbag. And I seriously don't know what to think of Dennis now. That one shook me. I couldn't even watch the footage off of Crooks and Liars because I just think it was gonna hurt too much. Yeah, and Ron and Bob adds in a great point. Ron Paul's also a bigot. Now I don't know him. I don't know him as well as you all do, but the reason that he gets so much traction at the moment is because he is talking about, you know, personal privacy and all that kind of stuff, which that's all great, and I'm all for that. But it's the rest of the stuff that I'm not into, and I, you know, like Paul's got a bit of a bug up his butt about the Federal Reserve, which, you know, I can go a few rounds with him on that as well. But this, whoever the advisor was that got him to make this little statement thinking that it might be a really groovy political move, it wasn't. It was really stupid. It was really dumb. And I'm not going to make any attempt to try and defend Dennis on this one. And, you know, Bob's tossing in, you know, he's trying to get into the unity movement, and I can see that, but Ron Paul ain't the guy. I get the concept, but Ron Paul ain't the guy. And I think it's also way too early to start talking about running mates, especially when you're an outside candidate. Because believe me, I'm a big supporter of Dennis. He's still my man, but I'm going to drop him a line and tell him what I thought about this. Because I do think, you know, and Bob and I have talked about this before, Dennis will stay in this race until the very last second. And if nothing else, he's going to help drive the dialogue of the main candidate and then the front runner when the time comes by staying in it. And as the rest of them drop off, the camera time is just going to have to open up for him. And he's going to stick it out to the end, and I think it's fantastic. And I still think that there's even a chance that if he could get the backing and a little bit more machine, he could be a front runner. Because when you poll people, he actually is talking about the things that Democrats are talking about. And why it is that the Democratic establishment gets to make fun of Kucinich and belittle him drives me nuts. But I think, you know, I think Nanette in the chat room is right. And I think, you know, if he was running with Ron Paul, I think Dennis would lose. I think he'd lose big time. And I honestly don't see the more fervent of Ron Paul's supporters being real happy with Dennis Kucinich either. On a few. But, I mean, come on, Dennis. That's reaching a little bit much. Just stick to the plan, man. Stick to the plan. Keep talking about universal health care and civil rights and departments of peace. Love you, man. Love you, love you, love you. This idea of Paul and the unity thing, not so much. So if you're listening, just, yeah, that's that. So far my only recommendation. Other than that, you're doing just fine. But yeah, I was really wondering if I was suddenly in opposite land for a moment when that was about the first thing that I saw. It was the first thing that I saw waking up this morning. I'm going, oh, coffee must not be kicked in yet. I can't be reading that right, but. Yeah, and Bob's telling me that Paul's people just kind of put the fire out on that idea. And I'm not surprised. There was a time in the past where a unity thing you might have gotten me on. Not anymore, man. I want to see in the United States what happened here in Australia. An absolute ass-whooping. About 9 o'clock on Saturday night, as the results were coming in down here, RoadToSerfdom.com just posted the picture of a Louisville Slugger baseball bat. And the headline, I think, was, could it be? And that's what I want to see. I want to see the right wing and the Republicans absolutely gutted. I want them to have in one fell swoop not only their party be, you know, whacked down, but to have, you know, all of them powerless in the end. I want them humiliated. I'm no longer about just winning. I'm about winning big. Because I'll tell you what, it feels damn good. Oh, yeah, it does feel good. And I thought it was fitting that on an Australian site, they didn't use a cricket bat. They used a baseball bat. And I think that was just... That was just, you know, to kind of give an idea of the severity of what was going on. But anyway, folks, we're coming up on the end of things, and I'll get off this election at some point, and I'll get back to normal things, but for right now, I'm gloating! Thanks to Bob Kincaid for producing. Thanks to our bloggers and our mods for everything that they do. Thanks to Scott Berry at B1 Louder Productions and Ben Birch at the White Rose Society. And as we see you here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you tomorrow.
If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I would tell you that sometimes it's easier to desire and pursue the attention and admiration of 100 strangers than it is to accept the love and loyalty of those closest to me. And I would tell you that sometimes I prefer to look at myself through someone else's eyes. Eyes that aren't clouded with the tears of knowing what an asshole I can be as yours are. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I might be able to listen in silence to your concerns, rather than hearing everything as an accusation or an indictment against me. And I would tell you that sometimes I use sex to avoid communication. It's the best escape when we're down on our luck. But I can express more emotions than laughter, anger, and let's...
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is the Quality News Network. 6,000 Sunni Arab residents of Iraq will join a security pact with American forces in what U.S. military officials term a critical step in securing any remaining escape routes for members of al-Qaeda. The new alliance is being called the single largest volunteer mobilization since the war began. In response to this week's Middle Eastern Peace Conference in Annapolis, Maryland, Iran's top leader, who was not invited, predicts the demise of Israel as a nation and calls the summit a failure. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad says no agreement is complete without inclusion of Hamas leaders concerning any future Palestinian state. Meantime, President Bush is asking for the world's support for future peace negotiations between Israeli and Palestinian leaders. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas both on their way back home now after reaching an historic agreement to settle differences concerning a future Palestinian state by late next year. A federal grand jury has begun hearing testimony in the September killing of 17 Iraqi citizens by Blackwater private security guards. In addition, the families of several victims have filed a federal lawsuit against Blackwater USA. In Iraq, a female suicide bomber detonated herself in central Bakuba, wounding 7 U.S. soldiers and 5 civilians. U.S. airstrikes over eastern Afghanistan killed at least 14 local members of a road crew working on a highway. U.S. military authorities say the bombings were based on faulty intelligence. 12 states are suing the federal government for more open information concerning toxic chemicals that companies store, use, and release into the environment. New rules from the Environmental Protection Agency allow thousands of companies to keep information quiet about toxics they use in processing, such as lead and mercury. The civil action filed by New York Attorney General Andrew Cuomo seeks to invalidate the EPA's revised rules. And CT scans are putting more Americans at increased cancer risk. New study published in the New England Journal of Medicine indicates that in a few decades, as many as 2% of all cancers in the U.S. may be caused from radiation from CT scans being given now. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll be back right after this message.
Civility takes an effort. It requires that people remember that relationships need our attention. Whether we are talking about our most important personal relationships, how we get along with our colleagues, or the way we interact with strangers, it is what we contribute that defines the results. Even when the other people are not prepared to give their best selves, what we put in determines what we get out. Ralph Waldo Emerson suggested, "We must be as courteous to a man as we are to a picture, which we are willing to give the advantage of a good light." This is the essence of civility. When we are civil to strangers, when we defer at the intersection instead of racing out ahead, when we hold the door for someone we don't know, when we smile at someone who catches our eye, we declare our choice for a civilized society. For more information, click on the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Consumer confidence fell this month to its lowest level in 2 years. Analysts blame record-setting oil prices and the ever-deepening housing slump. Even so, Americans spent $733 million online Monday for holiday gifts. That's a 21% increase over this time last year. Home prices fell 4.5%. That's the steepest drop in 20 years. Sales of existing homes and condos